guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Mind Yourself podcast in association with Motus. Back again, myself and Christy are together to further pick apart and discuss the state of mental health education. So to dive right in, Christy, I think it'd be interesting to kind of get your perspective on, you know, you came into this industry. We first met in the early days of Motus in 2018. And that's what, nearly 6 years ago now. It'd be interesting to understand your perspective on when you got into the, you know, education and mental health education at that time and what your views on it were and how you've seen the kind of area and the industry develop since the start of Motus to now and, you know, how you see it now and what your view is. But maybe start with the progression of it and we can dive into it.
Okay. I think I've spoken about this before. So there's something when you start a PhD called the Dunning-Kruger effect. And it basically says that when you start something, you're convinced of your research is correct. So what you're doing is definitely right. Then as time goes on, you realize that you're completely wrong. And then as time goes on, you just realize it's complicated. And that has been my exact process for the past 4 or 5 years since I started. So this is good, Owen, because we can kind of compare because you're kind of looking at it from the outside while I'm looking at it from the inside. So that was my difference when I started. So in 2018, 2019, both of us believed, and it makes sense, mental health education makes sense. Like if you educate a child on how to take care of their mental health, you can prevent it before it happens. What's happening at the moment, this is very, very new. And I'll talk about this in a bit more detail, and then I'll talk about like mental health programs in Ireland. But what's happening very recently is there's a lot of studies coming out showing that not only do these programs not work, but actually some of them are actually causing problems. A very, very recent study in Australia. So what they did was they promoted this idea of DBT, so dialectical behavioral therapy, is like a treatment for psychiatric disorders. And they were like, we'll take the skills from this and teach it to children. And what it actually found is it actually increased depressive and anxiety symptoms. Now, don't be getting worried, by the way. I'm not throwing Motus out the window. Just quickly. Secondly, then there was this huge perfect study. Like by perfect, I mean they did everything perfectly, which is very, very difficult to achieve because they had a lot of money to do so. It was called the Myriad study, and this Myriad study was basically this 10-week mindfulness course for secondary school students. They did everything perfectly. They compared it against a control group. They randomized it. It couldn't have been better. The results from it didn't work. And there's been a few other studies ever since that that they either don't work, that's what's generally happening, they do work, or else, but it's very minimal on how they do work. And then the third thing is, as I mentioned, it's actually causing issues. And so, like, obviously everybody in the field, like I'm working with a few researchers who are studying other programs, and this is scary, obviously.
Yeah, because we thought we'd figured it out, and maybe we haven't.
Yes. But my theory behind this now, and this is quite new, is all of the programs that haven't worked have been clinically based. So they're basically trying to apply, they're trying to prevent problems. But the problem is all of these studies, they're always focused on preventing like mental health symptoms like depression and anxiety. And what it's kind of showing is that that doesn't really seem to work. But what I think it does work on, and there is evidence of this, is it's helping the positive things. So for example, it might not be reducing depressive symptoms, but what it is doing is it's increasing psychological well-being. And there's a difference between the two of them. So psychological well-being, okay, is kind of like feeling good. Do you get me?
Yeah.
So it might not prevent you feeling bad, but it can help you feel good. Does that make sense? And then the other huge complication to this is, like, I can ask you up front now. If I just said to you, I know it's not your background, but if I was just said to you, right, we want to create a mental health program, what's the first what's the first thing you would do?
To create it?
Yes.
I don't know. I actually don't know. I don't know where you'd start. I mean, it's weird. I'm probably influenced by, you know, what we've done.
Of course,
and I might go, we want to look at the research and make sure it's correct and things like that.
Yeah, but before you can research something, you have to create something. Do you get me?
Yeah.
So, like, I suppose, like, a good place to start is... I'll start by explaining, you see, the difference now between me and you being outsiders and then actually getting into academia. Like, also, I think academia does is kind of highlights the issues because, like, from the outside, it's just how you market something. You know, it's just about kind of selling something. So, like, if you spend a load of money on marketing and stuff, like, I'm not going to throw out names, but if you throw out, like, put a load of money, people think, oh, and you have a good
message. That must
message.
Be good.
It must be good, yeah. But then when you go into academia, marketing doesn't matter. Do you know,
no one's convinced by marketing. It's all in the data and the actual evidence.
Academics don't care if the program's been rolled out to 10 people or 5 million people, you know. It's just about, like, does it work? And so, well, the first thing is, like, when you're developing a program, I suppose a good place to start is to get experts in the area in. That's obvious.
Yeah.
Programs now you often see that are being developed, like, we have lots of competitors, they're not doing that. So that's the first thing. They could be teachers or they could be somebody who did, like, a master's in, let's say, positive psychology, and they're like, I think this should be taught to students, and so they start rolling it out. So that's the first issue. And, like, when you actually get into academia and then so you develop the program, and then generally how it should work then is you need to basically, the expert should step up and be like, okay, well, it needs to be developmentally appropriate. So you, like, you can't teach cognitive behavioral therapy to a 6-year-old, you know, because they can't articulate it. So it has to fit a certain time period. And then obviously the second thing you have to do is you have to research it. You have to see, does it actually work? And when you get into the academia in Ireland, it's actually quite scary how little these programs have been researched. So, like, from my research now, like, one of the first things I did is I looked up studies evaluating, like, mental health programs. And so for children younger than 10, there's this program called Zippy's Friends. It came from Australia. That's been researched. It works. Fantastic. Although, funnily enough, you never hear that really talked about. But that's another point. Second thing then is you have the Friends for Life program. This is what the government promotes. Its resources, it worked in Australia. One issue in Ireland, though, there's been complaints about it, is that it's not culturally appropriate. So, for example, what you're teaching an Australian student might be relevant to what you teach to an Irish student. That hasn't been successfully translated, and that's obviously an issue. Friends for Life is the whole way through primary school. Then there's Weaving Wellbeing. I saw one study on this. It showed that it didn't work, but it hasn't been published. So I don't know if the research continuing on that. And then I know their Lust for Life program that is currently being researched. Other than that, that's it. So I've looked a lot and, you know, there's a lot more programs than that. And they're the only ones that I've seen researched for our age range. And then, and then there's one, then there's Mind Up for older, for, like, transition year up. So Mind Up, that was a perfect study done by one of my colleagues, Katie Dowling, and Margaret Alicia Clark and Margaret Barry in Galway. That works and it's done well, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. And I also know then my supervisor, Jenny McMahon, she's also working on MySci, which is a TY up as well. So there is research being done and it is becoming more common, but in relation to, like, any sort of evidence base, it's really, really lacking. So that's concerning.
And tell me this, because obviously, you know, as you said, you don't want to scare people, or you don't want to tell people, like, yeah, all of this research is for nothing and nothing has been figured out. But has there been, so obviously what you're saying is that maybe the, you know, the route that is being taken isn't exactly right. Certain things work. It's maybe not get, it's not preventing the, you know, the depressive symptoms or anxiety and things like you mentioned. Has there been, have they figured out why it's not working, or is that still a mystery?
Yeah. So this is the thing. The reason why, the most likely reason why it's not working is because psychology, this is the answer to all psychology questions. It's just extremely complicated to actually measure it accurately. Because the problem is when you go into a classroom and you teach it to a whole classroom, it probably does work for some students, but there's other students who it doesn't work for, you know? And like, that's not saying the program doesn't work then. It just means it works for some or it doesn't work for others. That's one issue. The other issue then is what you're actually measuring. So like, all of these are self-reported. So like, how do you feel today? Like that type of question. And the program might be working, but one day a child might have a really bad morning and come in and then say that they're depressed, you know? So as a result, like, it's very, very difficult to account for that. That's only one set of issues, the fact that the measures are self-reported. And then the other issue with the measures then is when you're measuring psychological well-being, what is psychological well-being? You know, like, that's never, it's never been
one
determined. But
one person's version of psychological well-being could be a different one. Do you feel in a happy mood? And I know, yeah, we can argue about happy being a mood, all that kind of stuff. But I mean, generally, are you in a good place right now mentally? One person scale on what is being in a good place mentally might be different to someone else's, you know? And it's very hard to say there's a quantifiable level to say your psychological well-being is at that level, because it probably differs person to person, I'd say.
Exactly. And I would argue this is the most important point then. There's this new thing now that's becoming very, very common in this area called implementation science. And what this is talking about is, like, because most people, when I said, how would you start? You get an expert into the first thing. And from my understanding of other people creating programs, the next step then is, what are we going to teach the children? But from my understanding, it's not that it's, I suppose, less important. But what is as important is, how are we going to teach it? And this involves so many elements. So, like, for example, how long is the program? You know, if you make it too short, you don't give enough time for children to consolidate the information. If you make it too long, children get bored. You know, they stop paying attention. The other thing is, how long do you make each lesson? Like, should you make it a half an hour, an hour, 2 hours? Next question then is, should it be taught by a teacher? Or should it be taught by an expert facilitator? Now, obviously, this was always my assumption. And obviously, this is what MODIS does. It has an expert. It has an expert teacher. So like, a psychology graduate come in, because my argument would obviously be, teachers don't have enough time. The curriculum's already overloaded. And so, like, they can't be just given a book and be like, teach this. And the other thing too is, they're not educated on it. They didn't cover that when they did their teaching degree. So why do we assume that they can teach mental health? While on the other hand, you then have psychology graduates who have been studying this for 3 or 4 years and they can't get work. So we think that makes sense, but it's the feasibility of it then. Like, if you're going to have experts come in, like, you can't have experts come in for a half an hour in 10 weeks in a row, you know?
Yeah.
It's just because you wouldn't reach enough people then. And so, like, this implementation science is really, really important, and we haven't really got it right.
And is that not standardized? Sorry to cut across you, but, like, I mean, you know, we're talking about a mental health workshop, but also there's been workshops and classroom activities going on for generations for various different topics and themes. Is, I would have assumed that the whole classroom or education dynamic on how to deliver information or, you know, education effectively to kids with them to adopt it in the best way. I, now again, as someone who hasn't researched, has any experience, just from, you'd assume that at that point that has probably been, I can't imagine, I would have assumed that sort of research and understanding exactly how to most effectively educate people had been exhausted, because, you know, it's a standardized practice that has been around for hundreds of years of how to teach people things. So it's funny to think we're still figuring out how to best get it across.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, because if you looked, like, so like, social emotional learning is being heavily, heavily like, scrutinized at the moment. You know, it's a hot topic. So it's been like, there's so much research coming out. It's not half as much research coming out on, let's say, like, how to teach maths. You know, it's just because it's new, but like, every subject has the same issues. You know, like if you're teaching a maths class and you've been teaching it for 10 years, you know, like a teacher's well educated on it, doesn't mean they're going to reach every child, you know, because there's other variables always in play. The way to overcome the implementation issue is if you had the same program and you broke it up in different ways. So let's say you had like a 10-hour program and you broke it up into 5 2-hour lessons, two full days, or 10 1-hour lessons, and then you'd compare which group remembered the information better. That would be, or applied the information. But the problem with that then is you have different students, and each of those different students, it might not be the program that's influencing that, but it could be maybe their home life and things like that. And so you can kind of hear now, I'm kind of transitioning from the pessimistic, I understand nothing, to it's complicated in that Dunning-Kruger effect I was talking about. It is very, very difficult to measure. But going back as well, I mentioned that Mind Up program. So that Mind Up program, it was a program that was started actually in Galway, rolled out primarily in Mayo, and they found that it improved like loads of measures in TY students from DESH schools in Ireland. And the reason why I think they worked is because they really, really focused on the implementation. It wasn't so much about the content, that was important, but what was more important was the implementation. So they had people from charities go in to check in on the teachers to make sure that they were teaching it correctly. That's the first thing that's often not being done. Because the implementation like is as, if not more important than the actual content. And we kind of have to get that right. And that's where the research is lacking. We don't understand that enough. The other thing as well is, so I'm not going to go into detail in this, but like you understand like what, like a theoretical framework is kind of how you understand something.
Yeah.
And I think there is a division here of all of the programs that aren't working. They're looking, their theoretical framework is clinical psychology. They're looking at it from a clinical lens. And I think that's the problem. Whereas social emotional learning, which has been found to benefit children's mental health, that is looking at it from a positive psychology perspective. It's not a clinical. And I think that differentiation is really, really important. And it's not talked about enough.
So does this, and obviously as the layperson in this discussion, talking both from execution of the content or delivery of the content being one problem, and then also misinterpreting the problem that we're actually trying to solve in that it's driven from a clinical research perspective, but we're not clinically treating people, we're talking more about their social emotional well-being. Is that coming back to, and I think this is not a psychology in a, you know, psychology sector only problem. Is this come back to that at times disconnect between academia and the experts behind the research for any field, and then the implementation in reality and the real world sort of factors that actually come out with how it actually makes it successful? Is that possibly where the issue is?
Yes. And on the topic of the lay person, the general public, this is the biggest issue, in my opinion. The biggest issue is there has been a failure to divide mental health and mental illness. And the main researcher who's talked about this is Lucy Folkes. She's in the University of Oxford. Dr. Amory Creven has talked about it as well in UL. It's these mental health education programs, if they are teaching mental illness, if they're teaching anxiety and depression, which a lot of them are, what you're doing is you're telling children that any sort of distress, or you're not telling children, but they can misinterpret it as any sort of distress is mental illness. So what's happening then is children are feeling worried about starting secondary school, for example, and they think they have anxiety.
And they're labeling it.
Yeah. And this is why these programs can have an issue, because what they're doing is they're stigmatizing, They think they're removing the stigma, but the problem is what they're doing is they're removing the stigma from mental health, saying you're feeling down one day, and mental illness. You're not removing the stigma from mental illness, because basically what you're doing is, I'm feeling depressed today, but I don't have an illness. Do you hear me? And it's not like society's fault. It's just like I don't know whose fault it is. It's just the world hasn't done a good job at dividing it. It's just, it's complicated.
Yeah. But I suppose we went from a generation, our parents' generation, where society didn't label anything and people who were suffering in silence didn't have any way of contextualizing the illness, and it is an illness, they're feeling. Now things are moving in the other direction where, as you said, we're trying to remove the stigma. But in essence, what we're doing is we are giving people labels to, well, we're making people aware that there is an illness out there, and but maybe, as you said, we're not properly explaining it. So people are now misinterpreting certain feelings and therefore labeling it when it's maybe not an actual clinical illness. And because this is the other thing I find generationally that I often get asked, just having, you know, working with motives and things like that, that people always say, are you guys, and this is, I'm talking my parents' generation, it's they're usually the people with these statements, are you guys, like Modas and others, not causing more issues because you are basically talking about mental health more and mental illness more, which is making people sort of, when they may be having just a bad day, and in our day we would have just said, I'm just having a bad day, people and I saying, now I'm depressed or I have anxiety, and are you basically causing more problems by that? And often I come back to with like, no, that's ridiculous, but again, I don't really. So it's interesting hearing your perspective on this.
But yeah, so Lucy Folk's argument is the answer to that would be yes, but the problem with that, so I would go further then again, but the problem is that in that is you need to be very careful in your content to see, are you teaching about mental health or are you teaching about mental illness? And a very, very obvious way of kind of overcoming this, I suppose, is teaching. When you're in your workshops, is teaching the difference between mental health and mental illness. You know, we all have mental health. We don't all have mental illness. And like, so like in relation to, is it dangerous? I think, yes, it is dangerous to go into a classroom and teach them about, if you're feeling depressed, this is what you should do. And not going into detail about what exactly depression is, because depression is still to a degree subjective. That's the problem. You know, it's not an objective. Now, the DSM would say it is objective, but, or a psychiatrist might say it is, but in reality, it's not. But you see, the problem is we're going in and we're not dividing that. We're not being clear that, like, guys, not as many of you have depression. If you're having a difficult day. And the other thing, the other big, big issue, well, there's two other big issues with this. The other big issue as well is when you go into schools and you say, like if you're feeling depressed, you should do X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. When you go in and do that, what you're actually doing is you're telling that child that they're fully responsible for their own mental illness. When in reality, it's more than likely like a much bigger problem. Like, let's say like an adverse childhood experience, or it could be a poverty, for example.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the other issue. We're kind of putting the pressure that they're expected to deal with it. But again, all of this is avoided if you just don't address mental illness and you completely work on mental health.
Yeah, on mental health.
And what I mean by mental health is, this is just education about like your mind, your brain, your body, that type of stuff. Like another example, I suppose, that's more applicable, it's easier to understand, is if you want to improve students' sleep, you don't go in with an insomnia workshop. You know, you go in with sleep. Or for example, if you want to raise the awareness about exercise, you don't go in talking about obesity only. You talk about exercise, you know, like, but in social emotional learning, what seems to be happening, or not social emotional learning, but mental health programs, that generic word, people are going in talking about depression, anxiety, how to prevent panic attacks. That's the problem.
What's interesting is, and I think we've referenced this, is that I remember, you know, I haven't noticed it as much recently because people are more used to the terminology and things, but I remember initially when introducing the topic of the Motors workshop into schools, we had an interesting discussion because when we were sharing information to schools, I remember one school said, we'd like to send this out to teachers, but can we reword the kind of description of the workshop? Because in it, it said something around just mental health, I think. And they were concerned that that would trigger parents starting to freak out that all their kids had suicide, all their kids were depressed. And we were actually then had to go through the whole process of, that's not what we're saying. We're actually talking about education. And what's interesting is, and I always go back to the very first step in our workshop with kids. Our first workshop, the one that we've done the longest with kids around 11 to 13, we do this exercise around emotional labeling and giving kids the language to be able to describe how they're feeling. Yeah. And in quickly trying to be better at educating people around mental health, have we in the industry and the industry and academia as a whole forgotten about how we label what we're doing? So in a sense, you've said it's mental health and it's mental illness. They're still very similar in regards the language there. And should there be more thought about how we are presenting language-wise? Because we do the same when we were talking about emotional kind of labeling with kids. We say there's a difference between being annoyed, angry, frustrated, or sad and depressed. And so should we also not be thinking about how we're labeling the difference between mental health education and mental illness treatment?
Yes, 100%. There's a lot of points there. So the first thing is, another word that's been thrown in as well is well-being. Well-being is how the curriculum is described now. But like how we need to be able to see it is, I think well-being and mental health can be used interchangeably, but mental illness is completely something separate. The other message we need to promote as well is that life isn't about having no distress. Stress is a normal part of life. And in fact, there's even biologically, there's a thing called eustress. So we need a certain level of stress. So like when we wake up in the morning, for example, our stress level should go up to help us prepare for the day. And we are at optimal performance, like flow, when we are a bit stressed. It's not about avoiding that distress. But I suppose the biggest differentiation, the easiest one, is in all of the DSM like diagnoses, it's basically if your mental, I even have to be careful about how to word this. If your mental state is causing you to not be able to do anything, or it's basically not being able to not have good relationships, to not get through the day, to essentially, in many cases, not be able to leave the house, to get out of your bed, to do anything. That's mental illness. And you see now what's happening in society is people are coming out saying, oh, I was depressed. I've been feeling down the last few days. But that's just poor mental health. It's not mental illness. Mental illness is literally when you are incapable of doing anything. And then like what needs to be done better is when your mental health is getting very poor, that's when you seek therapy. You know, that's when you seek help. You don't wait for the mental illness, and that's where the prevention comes in. But, you know, like these workshops, they're going in, they're telling people if you're feeling down, this is where you go for help. Like you contact this person or that person. And again, child has one bad day and then they're going to the GP, they're trying to get basically a psychologist in. And what that's doing then is it's putting pressure on the mental health services. And that's again how this kind of mental health stuff can be, or this mental health education can be an issue. It's just like it's funny.
I mean, I suppose it's a luxury for me to be able to you know, this is something I think that you don't often hear. I mean, the point is that people go through services, they experience services, not just for mental health, for all types of treatment, be it physical health, mental health, just schooling and education. And oftentimes people will have comments or views on whether it works, whether it doesn't work. I suppose the luxury we have is obviously you have a bit of a lens to inside academia and the kind of research going behind it. I think what's reassuring is the amount of research that goes into it, but also that attitude around not accepting it just because all of that work has gone in and all of this research and assumptions that went in at the start. Like you said, you went in with certain assumptions and the industry went in with certain assumptions and did all this work. And rather than just trying to fit the problem into the solution that they created based on their assumptions, it's like, let's maybe take a step back and reassess why it's not working and how we have to change. And it's a never-ending kind of cycle of like feedback, research, better understand and try and do things better.
Yeah, and also just to clarify, this is important, no, just to clarify, our program does work, but it's not as effective as I thought it would be. That's an important clarification. And I also, big take-home message as well here is, I'm not telling everybody mental health programs don't work, full stop. What I'm saying is, it's complicated. They sometimes work, they sometimes don't. They can even sometimes have a negative effect. And I also want to point out, there's way more research showing... I would say it's about 45% research is showing that there is little small benefits. There's 45% research showing that there's no effect. And then there's maybe like 10% probably even being overreacting. But I think more will come out that it actually has a negative effect.
But
I would actually say that's probably like 2-5% will come out. Okay. But the other good thing too is I think the problem was when this research first started, you know, there was a bias there. Everybody was like, it should work. So I think it biased their research to, to like, you know, they wanted to demonstrate that it did work. But what seems to be happening now is I think people are being a lot more honest because that's science. You know, you want something to work, but if it doesn't, it doesn't. You can't do anything about that. But the important thing as well is you need to constantly be researching. Like our plan with Motus is like, even when I finish the PhD, we're not going to stop, you know. This has informed basically how we change our program. And then when we've changed it around, we then test it again. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's not about it being perfect ever. It's about constant progress. That's how research should work. And then the next question as well, another thing to consider as well is, you need to like have a think about like, you know, these other programs. Are they directed towards the general public, everyone? These are these mental health programs, in my argument. But there are also those programs for children who are struggling, but they need to be focused specifically on them. They're not going to be helpful to children, you know, in the whole class. So like if you have like a depression workshop, I'm not saying that that's useless. What I'm saying is it's only helpful to a few children and it should only be taught to those few children. You know, differentiated, because if you go in talking about depression to the whole class, you'll end up having one or two children thinking they're depressed when they're just feeling sad, because everyone feels sad.
So I suppose you, and obviously I hear about it more, understanding, you know, the updates on the research and things like that, but I suppose you've opened my eyes, and I'm sure lots of people, to the fact that it's not, you know, how difficult science and research in academia is, because you have to go through all this work to find that you're maybe 20% of the way to solving the solution you thought you had, and there's 80% still unknown, or you have to rethink it or whatever it is. But I suppose you've laid out the fact that you went into the, you know, this industry or this space with a view that educating people, preventing problems before they occur, that kind of attitude was possible. And you've mentioned how it's still possible to give people tools to better understand their own mental state and better manage their mental state. And you've also said that educating people earlier in their deterioration in their mental state can maybe prevent unnecessary amounts of people going into clinical care and clogging up the public services if it's not required. But having gone through that, I suppose, self-learning as well and going through the research, and as you mentioned, it never stops. What, you know, to give people more of an optimistic turn, because I mean, everyone's going to say, crap, what the hell is everything? And, you know, Motus is teaching these people, and it's not just Motus, it's lots of other workshops all around the world and services all around the world. What now, at this point, at this kind of crux in the kind of the research behind this, where would you like to see it go? But it's very difficult to have you answer for the entire space, so maybe narrow it and go, where or what do you see Motus doing going forward and us doing going forward to take on board what we're seeing from the research and try and still fulfill that objective of trying to help educate people on their emotions and on their mental state and give them tools to maybe hopefully prevent certain mental illnesses occurring.
Whoa, okay.
It's a lot, but what I mean, you're not summary of where you haven't solved it yet, but what direction do you want
to
go?
First thing I'm going to go back to is another good example that I just thought of as well is important message we also need to teach children as well is a big thing. The difference, I mentioned it already, is the difference between distress and mental illness are like a big issue. We've got that with physical health. If you stub your toe, you know, extremely painful, but you don't go to the hospital, you know, that is the difference as well. So that can actually be translated to mental health. The second point then is in relation to like, where do you want to see it go? So the first thing is implementation science needs to be better. We need to focus more on that and not just about the content or not. I've created a program, so I'm going to see, does it work? Okay, so we need to basically base it on, okay, like looking at implementation, what should work or what will not work, in what way. We need to test that first. Second thing then is we then need to understand the program content. And what that means is it's not just about the content, but also specifically to what developmental context. So I am convinced, again, I don't have this evidence because I haven't compared it against a group who didn't receive it at that age. But like the MOTIS program seems to work, I think, because again, it's not geared towards mental health in general. It's geared towards secondary school transition. So like we explained that when you go into secondary school, you're going to have lots of new emotions with puberty. You're going to have to deal with lots of new situations and you're going to be more independent. So these skills will help that. That's kind of what we're focused on. And so we need to take that into account. We can't just have a random program and teach it to like fourth class. Because if they're not going to have to use the tools, why will they remember it down the line, you know?
Yeah.
And so like there's other transitions there. Like there should be programs, for example, specifically geared towards exams. There should be ones geared towards the transition into like third level education or the workplace. And like the transition into the senior cycle of primary school, for example. You can't just make one program and throw it at a random group of children. You know,
yeah,
it needs to be more specific. And then the other thing people need to account for is there are, I would go as far as saying, thousands of variables that could influence the effectiveness of an SEL program. And so we need to look at all of them. Like, I actually recently had an interesting conversation. So my sister works in education and she is talking about how this there's a group called IB. And they've essentially transformed their educational curriculum. So it's not just you sit down, I give you information, you learn it off, and then it comes up in the exam. It's more about the student guides what they want to learn. So you have a certain topic about a project and you basically ask the students, what do you want to learn about? So it's basically like the students, the driver of the program. And you know, this very new age, it sounds fantastic. Loads of people would get excited by the sound of that. But there are still some children who will do better in the traditional form. You know, sometimes they just need to sit down. Another thing I've seen as well is removing all sorts of punishment. You know, that basically if children are misbehaving, it's because they're misunderstood. And as a result, they shouldn't be punished, but we should understand what the problem is and never punish them. Again, some children need discipline. That's just the way it is. And so like you need to individually tailor the education. It's very, very difficult, especially for an underfunded teacher in an underfunded school. But those are the questions that research will be answering down the line, is basically like this type of social emotional learning program, why is it helpful not to a full class, but why is it helpful to this specific child, or why is it helpful to just girls, or why is it helpful to only 14-year-olds? That's kind of the next question now. Like, again, it's great that there's loads of research on this at the moment, but we need to start focusing more on specific types of children, because children are different, you know, they're not all the same. And like, I've spent now the past 6 years of my life trying to understand just the ages from 11 to 13. And as I've explained to you, Owen, I still haven't a clue. So like, that's the type of dedication. But the problem is that's not what society wants to hear. Society wants the quick fix.
They want the magic bullet.
Give mental health education to every single child and that will help.
Yeah.
But that's not the case.
That's not going to solve it. Yeah. Okay. I suppose, I mean, it's a weird one. I mean, I think what that at least the reassuring thing is that, as you said, from a MOTUS perspective and from a what we can control in regards, you know, the workshop we provide, at least it's acknowledging the limitations of what we do so we don't overpromise, because the dangerous thing when dealing with, as you said, this topic, mental health, mental illness, is overpromising, under-delivering, and then leaving kids in a vulnerable position. So I think that's important, for one. And I think the positive thing for people listening is to understand that through the process of us researching our program and doing number of different, you know, research experiments on the effectiveness of the program, is we're learning how to be more and more valuable to the people we work with. And as we said, we're both learning not just on the actual content behind the workshop, we're learning how to deliver the workshops better and the services better. We're also learning how to promote and explain what our workshops do better. So we're explaining the fact that these things are geared towards mental well-being, not curing mental illness. And I think overall, it's only going to improve what we're providing as ourselves as MOTUS, but hopefully the industry as a whole, as this research is stuff that lots of people are working into. And if that's a kind of a positive note for people to take out, I think that's a good thing. I think even just thinking to this topic, I think it's something you could nearly make an entire podcast series on, the ever-changing insights you're gathering from mental health research. And I suppose this exercise of you talking to me and this being a kind of a person in the industry versus a person outside the industry, which we've been doing for a few years with the podcast, but I think is always a healthy exercise, is forcing us, at least within MOTUS, to, and with your research, to always be thinking about the implementation of an effectiveness to the general public, because a lot of stuff makes sense to people in the industry from an academic perspective. Translating that to be effective to a person, for them to be able to take in the information and then actually learn from it, is a separate thing. And so that challenge of you talking to me about these topics and me trying to comprehend them as well, is something we always spoke about, is trying to translate academia into actual reality. And I think, I think that can only be a positive thing for the people who will benefit from these services, not just ours, but others as well.
Yeah. And the take home message as well is, so like, the general public have more awareness on this, but academics as well. If you have like a product or a service in this area, firstly, research it. That's the first thing, because we now know that not only might it have no effect, because we need to consider opportunity cost. You know, if you spend 10 weeks on a program, children could have been learning something that was actually useful as opposed to something that doesn't really matter. That's the first thing. But also, if your program doesn't work as well, report it. Because that's a big, big thing that I always see, is basically like papers trying to kind of wean around like not reporting it properly. Like, for example, now, like our research, now we looked at 7 different outcomes and only 2 found were significantly improved. So, you know, that's important to publicize. Then, like, that doesn't mean, because there's obviously an outlook then that, oh, you know, the program, it doesn't work and everybody's going to think it doesn't work. But if you continue with it, what that means is you learn from your mistakes. Why didn't you find those outcomes? Research that and then make those edits and then improve the program. You know, that's the benefit of it. It's just, the problem is society just doesn't care about that. Yeah. But
well, that's our job, to try and make it work, I suppose.
Exactly.
I mean, that's why you got into it.
Yeah. And from a researcher perspective, I think we have an ethical obligation to do that. So,
Okay. I think that's a good note to end it on. I think for listeners, I think, as you see, this is a very fluid industry and a line of research, and there'll always be kind of new developments and improvements. And we will, as always, continue to endeavor to, as you said, report the insights we're gathering, make iterations, research more, figure out how we can be better, add to the kind of global knowledge in regards how to effectively educate on, you know, emotional and well-being. And continue to listen. We'll continue to keep people informed on what we're learning. We'll continue to kind of improve our workshops. We might dig into this topic in a future podcast series where we kind of address, you know, the changing landscape of psychology research around mental health education. But yeah, Christy, is there anything to add, or will we?
No, I think that's it. Like, yeah, and if we have this same conversation a year in time, you know, I'll probably have a different perspective.
Or have a different perspective.
More research will come out, like, so, yeah.
Exactly. And that's what keeps it exciting. So as always, if anyone has any questions or feedback or anything they want to share or ask us, either about the podcast or but generally about what we do at Modus, please reach out to us on through the website or through social media. Yeah, let us know if there's anything else you want us to dig into in this space. We'll continue to provide as much positive mental health content that we can, that you can learn from. But until next time, mind yourselves.